Theistic evolution. All right. I really would suggest, if you're interested in the subject, that you, you know, get out and do some research on it, because tonight isn't really going to solve all your problems. Has anybody really talked to people, though, that believe in theistic evolution? I know some of us here have. Do you have people in your ecclesia that believe in theistic evolution? Does anybody have somebody in their ecclesia? You do?
There used to be one.
Okay. So that's new to me, because, like, in my experience in Detroit and all the ecclesias I was in Ontario, and all the stuff I've done in California, I have yet to meet somebody who will talk about theistic evolution who says they believe in it. It's just, I just haven't run into that myself. That's a possibility, because that's a little bit different question than believe in theistic evolution. Yeah, so the question, I guess, becomes, should we tolerate theistic evolution in our midst? But if we don't even have people teaching it in our ecclesial area, we don't usually get into that subject if nobody even believes it. But it's something that we can think about in terms of, like, where do you stand on this? So years ago, this topic used to come up when I used to go to the seminars in Ontario that they would have in Hamilton. I think they were sponsored by Unamended back then. But every year they would run a Bible and Science seminar in Hamilton. I'd go up there because I always loved this stuff as a teenager. I was interested in science. And they'd bring in scientists from all over the world. In different topics of geology and archaeology and things, and they tell us from a scientific perspective, these would be scientists who weren't believers in the evolutionary theories. And instead, in macroevolution at least, they would give us what they found was the evidence of the fact that macroevolution does not actually take place, that there really is no evidence of a species changing into a different species. So that's when this used to come up, though, is that once in a while they would say that there were people in the Christian community who believed in theistic evolution. So that was my experience back in the 1970s, 80s. But now I guess what's happened is there are some folks in our community have bought into theistic evolution. So if you're interested, you can get online. There is a one-hour video by the Rugby Christadelphians that you can have a look at if you like to watch videos instead of reading books. They have published one. I don't know whether any of you ever looked that up before, the Rugby Christadelphians. They have a YouTube site, and they put out a lot of good material. So if you like to watch videos on the subject, I would recommend you you picked up that video and have a look at it. What it really is, where it came up originally, at least in the Christian community, was as evolutionary theory was moving into our public schools, and it was becoming more prominent in our society, this idea that species could change over time and that something like a dog could turn into a whale. This is the kind of belief system you're looking at. And they would look at all the evidence of the fossils, and they would present this idea that evolution could actually take place of species, so that if you had millions of years that could take place, well, then maybe these animals could change and plants could change in an entirely different species. And so then when this came up in the scientific community and prominent scientists started promoting this, then religious people were being like put pressure on them to like, well, how are you going to explain this? What are you going to do? And so what happened is many of the Christian churches at that point, including the Catholics and different ones, they bought into the idea, and then they accepted the idea that, all right, evolution is true, that macroevolution does take place, that species change over millions of years, and this is where we come from. But instead of teaching it the way a pure scientist would, they said, we think God directed it. We think God directed this evolutionary process, and that's how the process worked. So this is what, in my experience years ago, this is what we call theistic evolution. So it's a God-directed process of blending the scientific view of evolutionary theory today with religion in the Bible, and somehow finding a way to mesh the two together. That's what this is really all about. So if you're also interested in reading, you can download this one. This was put out by Mark Elfrey and Matthew Davies. It's a compilation of evidence against theistic evolution. But I would have to say that what it mainly deals with is something called the solid dome theory. Anybody ever heard of that one? I got to admit, I really hadn't heard of this until I started reading up on this subject. This is all modern stuff to me that we never ran into back in the 1970s and 80s. The solid dome theory is this idea that, you know, when you look back at the creation of our world, and it talks about there being water up above, and the waters above came down in the days of Noah, that God separated the waters back in Genesis and the firmament. There's a firmament above and a firmament below. And so they what they do is they link this with belief systems of like Hindus and Buddhists and all these different people who believed in this idea, and they would draw pictures of the fact that, you know, what's holding the atmosphere up there and beyond is that there's this dome up there being supported by pillars, and this is how people of ancient times used to understand. And so then they thought, well, all the Bible did is just borrow this idea and put it into Genesis 1. And anyways, it's, to me, it's really off the wall in terms of like the Bible itself. And it gets linked in with demon possession as well, which is very interesting. But you can download that free if you want, if you want to read about that, at christadelphianvideo.org. Now, personally, back when this came up, I always found the best Bible verse I would go to is Romans 5 and 12. And I always thought, if you're looking for a quick way to explain to people why we don't mix the Bible with evolution, it's because Paul, when he gives his exposition of the atonement, he very clearly lays out that death isn't just some random thing that came about as a result of evolutionary processes. Death, the reason we die, is because people sin. That is a clear Bible principle to me, all the way through the Bible, that death comes as a result of sin. Here's a clear place where Paul deals with it. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, looking back at Adam, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because all sinned. And he speaks of death in verse 14, reigning from Adam to Moses. So the explanation I would use to people real quickly was this view of theistic evolution does not mesh with Paul's exposition of the atonement. It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the whole concept of how we view death. When death is referred to as the enemy in 1 Corinthians 15, and that will be the last enemy that's destroyed is death. And that's because it came as a result of sin, and what we are hoping for is new bodies, immortality, and death will be no more. And so I would say that that's, to me, that's a clear passage that you can't believe in theistic evolution and really accept what Paul says in Romans 5 and 12 and 13 and 14 unless you redefine death right here. And I think that's what some of these people try to do. They say, well, it's not physical death, it's spiritual death, or you know, something like that. And that's how they sort of get through the passage. But very clearly, that's not what he's talking about. It's about a physical death. In 1 Corinthians 15, you can link in that with that. It's Paul's dealing with death. Death came as a result of sin, and he uses Adam as a federal head of how that actually came about. So that's the problem with all evolutionary theories, is they see death taking place as a random event and a result of organisms that were producing and dying and producing and dying over millions and millions and millions of years. And so by the time you get to Adam and Eve, death isn't a result of sin. Death has just been an ongoing process. It's been happening all the way through. Whereas we see death as the great enemy that came as a result of sin. And we see the great work that Jesus Christ is doing and our salvation is that he's found a way to redeem us from death, from the curse of death, and provide a way for us to be forgiven of our sins and to be given immortality. And that just does not mesh with theistic evolution. And to back that up, you can go back to Genesis 3 and show that that's what the Bible predicted all along. And back in Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve had sinned, the curse was that not only was the ground curse in verse 17, and it would bring thistles, but they were going to eat in the sweat of their face, they were going to eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. Dust you are, and to dust you shall return. And this is when death entered into our world as a result of sin. It is a direct consequence of sin. This is what Christadelphians have believed all along. This is what John Thomas wrote up in Elpis Israel. This is what's in our Constitution, our statements of faith, that we see death as being a direct result of sin, not some random thing that had just come about over millions of years that was just a natural result of life and death and life and death. That isn't the way it would work. So I don't see really how you can mesh theistic evolution with the Bible in honesty. You can think you do and you can pretend you do, but you really have to rewrite Bible passages and explain them in a very strange way that isn't what was intended. And to, along with that, you can show in Exodus 20 that Moses clearly believed in a six-day creation, that in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and all that's in them, and he rested the seventh. In Exodus 31, you see it again. In 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth. and on the seventh day he rested. So here's Bible exposition. This is the kind of thing Jesus would do. He would say, have you not read that, you know, that, and he would quote back from the Old Testament. So there's two good Bible verses that show that. In Matthew 19, this is what Jesus does. He goes back and he says, all right, there's no room here for theistic evolution, really. When he said, he answered them and said, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he's clearly referring to Adam and Eve. And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother, be joined to his wife. That comes right out of Genesis 3. So we know what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about Adam and Eve, the creation that we read about back there. And he definitely believed that this is how God had intended it. And I think what really comes out of this is that when you look what happens with this whole thing, this is not just an academic study. God wants you to understand that when the angels made Eve and took her out of Adam, and God made Adam and Eve and designed the family, he did it in such a way that he's designed it to work so that he can prepare you for immortality. This is not just some random event that's come about. He specifically designed it so that we would learn important moral lessons so that we can be members of his family. This is not random stuff at all. All of Genesis 1, 2, 3 is all about design. And the more you look into it, I think the more you'd be convinced of that. That's how Jesus and Paul use it. It's all about a design so that we can learn the characteristics of God and be part of his family. Now, I know the folks currently, what's happened in our Christadelphian community is that some people have now bought into the idea of macroevolution over millions of years, and they think that this is the strangest one that I read about. They think that all these different things developed over time, and that from some organism like a monkey developed all the monkeys, apes, the chimps, and humanoids. You know, and that what happened then is that these humanoids got to a point where they were close enough to mankind that then God created Adam and Eve right at that time. So there's all these humanoids that develop by evolution, and then there's Adam and Eve that are a special creation. And then what happened is that Adam and Eve and their kids married with the humanoids, and that's where we have our current world today. And to me, that was like, that's about off the wall as you can get. But what a way of blending evolutionary theory in with Bible passages so that you can still accept that, well, Romans 5, that applies to Adam and Eve, but then you've got them mixing in with all these humanoids and the whole thing becomes a muddy mess. And it's like, where in the world is that in the Bible? Right, just think about it. Where in the world does the Bible ever say anything like that took place? And I think for all of us here today, you can just go home and realize that when somebody gets that far away from the Bible, we know that there can't possibly be truth to that. That's total speculation of trying to mix science today with the Bible and coming up with a really weird way of doing it. So I didn't even realize that existed until I was reading about it. Well, it works great for their idea, but it's like, where is that in the Bible anywhere? It's like, see, the problem is not realizing that we think of incest today as such a bad thing, that marrying one of your relatives like that, although I happen to marry my third cousin, and it didn't turn out all bad. For those of you that think that's really weird because she was a Stiles, you have to realize my brother Ken, when he's here, he did too. He married his third cousin, but she came down a different line, even though she's just as related to him as Sue is to me. And my sister Ruth did the same thing with Bill Robinson. So all three of us in my family, we all married our third cousins. And that's what happens when you grow up in a small community and you don't travel and you just marry within the clan. Yeah, all my Muslim friends said they do it all the time. But from a biological perspective, when Adam and Eve were first created, I really believe what you could look at, you know, and what makes sense to me, is that when God made them, they were very good. And they were created in such a way that their gene pool was not as contaminated as ours is today. So they didn't have these things like cystic fibrosis genes coming down the line. They didn't have all these nasty things like Tay-Sachs disease. So they could intermarry within their group, and they weren't getting these nasty recessive genes combinations coming together. Today it's a different story. We've got all these things that have like mutated over time, and they're all in the gene pool, and it's really not a great idea to marry somebody really close to you. You get the same problem that you do with dogs when we breed dogs today, and we love these breeds like Labrador Retrievers and Golden Retrievers, and we think they're so cool, and then you read up on them and find out, yeah, the vast majority of them get cancer and joint diseases and all these problems because they have been interbred too often, and the genes have just mutated over time, and you can't afford to do that. You need new blood in the gene pool. So it's a different story back then. So what if Cain married his sister, had kids by his sister? That's not a big issue to us. The Bible just didn't care about it either, so it doesn't even reference it. So I don't like speculation like that. One of the things I found really interesting is looking at from an evolutionary perspective, and this would apply not just to theistic evolution, but to all macroevolution concepts. The evolutionary sequence that's put forth in evolution today is that the first things to evolve out of the list here were fish. And then plants and trees, and then insects, and then reptiles, and then birds, and then mammals, and finally humans. That is the traditional sequence you will get in a science evolutionary class. That's how they draw the trees. When you look in Genesis, that's not what ends up happening in this case. In Genesis, the order is different. And I think you can see that you cannot blend these two things together. That's not the way God made our world. And giving yourself thousands of years to accomplish Genesis 1 and the days being 1,000 or 1,000,000 years doesn't solve the problem of this is the wrong sequence. God says the sequence works like this. Evolutionary theory says the sequence works like that. And that's just one of the things that you run into in terms of problems. I don't believe there's any way you can mesh evolution today, the current views of macroevolution, with the Bible. It does not mesh any way at all. It doesn't fit the design. It doesn't fit the testimony of the characters of the Bible who believe that God made us in 6 days. It just doesn't work. So I don't really think you can do it. But there is evidence out there in science today. There's good evidence for the fact that God has made us. And there's all kinds of stuff you could get into tonight, which I could, but I'm not going to, even though it is one of my favorite topics because I taught biology for 18 years. And I got to look at this whole subject in detail and find out the goods and the bads of the evolutionary theory. And if you're ever interested or if somebody ever presents something to you at university and they try to convince you that macroevolution is true, I will be glad to sit down and talk to you and show you all the evidence they are not showing you. That you can read about, you can find it online, you just have to search a little further, and all they do is present to you, it would be like somebody going through the Bible, and going through the Gospel of John, and presenting to you all the verses about how Jesus says, I and the Father are one, and in the beginning was the Word, and it was with God, and it was God, and they try to present to you a case, and build their little case about how God and Jesus are one, and they're one God. And they miss all the other passages where Jesus acknowledges that I can do nothing of my own authority. And, you know, I only do what the Father does. And I can only preach to those that the Father gives me. And they leave out all that other stuff. And they don't even tell you about it because it doesn't fit the theory. But it's out there. You just have to search for it. But I won't do that tonight. So